All right, nice to have you back with us on this Saturday night. Bill Lasky, Ron Wotus with us. All right, I got the answer on the Cleveland Spiders. Why were they called? First of all, they were in the National League in the 1890s. They were called the Cleveland Spiders because the players were so skinny, and that's why they were called the Spiders. And the last year, they ended up with a record of 20 and 134, the worst in Major League history, 84 games behind the winning Brooklyn Superbas, and 35 games behind the next to last team, the Washington Senators. And they lost 101 games on the road, which will be a record that will never be broken. How about that?
Wow. Well, you don't want skinny players, I guess, huh?
No, you didn't want to be part of the Spiders, well.
No.
All right, that's that. All right, taking a pitcher out of the game. Well, we'll start with you. You know, you see so many pitching changes these days. Is it all done as soon as you walk out of the dugout? What happens when you get to the mound?
Well, I think every manager, when you leave the dugout, you know right then and there that you want to make a pitching change. I mean, you've already done your evaluation, right? You know, what's his command like? You know, what's his pitch count? You know, how did he get to his pitch count? Has he worked in and out of a lot of trouble? Maybe between innings, you talk to the catcher, how's his stuff? So you already have an idea what you want. And usually when a manager goes, you go out there to take the pitcher out of the game. You've made your decision. When you get to the mound, some people will ask, how do you feel? Well, what do you expect Bill Lasky to say? You know, I want out of the game. It doesn't matter how I feel. You know, you went out there, you see the matchup, you got all the information you need, and you went out to make a pitching change. And there are situations, if you go out and it's the first trip, obviously it's the second trip, you have to take him out. But the first time out there and you have a veteran guy and he's one of your horses, you know, sometimes you'll lose the battle or give him the chance to win that battle, but you want to win the war. So a lot goes into it. But I think every manager, regardless of what the pitcher says, unless it's a veteran guy and you don't really love the guy you're bringing in that much, but usually you leave the dugout to take him out. And Felipe was big on that. He would tell his pitchers, hey, don't argue with me. You're not going to talk me out of it. When I leave the dugout, I'm going to make a pitching change. End of story. What do you think, Bill?
Well, it's true. But, you know, as a starting pitcher, you're watching that manager walking towards you. And if he hasn't reached for that right arm or left arm, I'm saying to myself, I got a chance to talk him into another hitter. Because once they get to that dirt part, now I got to convince my catcher, give me one more hitter, because usually the manager will go to the catcher, what's he got, and he usually puts his head down, bullpen in. But if you got a chance to talk to him for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, the situation, of course, what's the score, heck yeah, I want another hitter, because who knows, if I get a double play, line drive, double play, get out of the inning, and you're in the game a little bit more. So it is a hot point as a starting pitcher, because you're in this game and most of it's like 6 1/3, 7 1/3, and you want to finish the game and you're trying to fight that manager, give me one more hitter. Now, sometimes it backfires and you give up a double or even a home run, and before he's coming out of the dugout, he's mad as hell at himself, and you got your head buried under the dirt going, damn, I should have let him take me out.
You ever talk anyone out of it, Bill?
Yeah, of course you did. You have to try to talk them out of it. But if you got a quick story, I'll tell you a quick story. It happened when Frank Robinson was manager, when Jim Barr was on the mound in New York. And Barr came into a game and ended up pitching one pitch to the next hitter, and Frank was taking him out of the game. And Jim Barr had nothing. He was cussing at him. He's walking and Shea staying him out, and he said, go back in the dugout, sit down, I want another hitter. He gets to the mound, and he didn't even get to the dirt, and Jim Barr fired the ball off Frank Robinson's chest.
Oh, no.
Underhand, boom. Frank grabs him by the arm, and Frank had a rule. You had to stay on that mound until your reliever came in, and then you departed. And he held Jim Barr's arm, and these guys were just going at it verbally. So he lets go. Jim comes in the dugout, and now he is screaming, I want you in here, Frank. I want you right here at the end of Shea Stadium. Well, I'm on a bench. It's my rookie, maybe 83, maybe second year in. Atlee and I are going, oh, my goodness, they're going to brawl right here into Shea Stadium's dugout. Well, sure enough, Frank comes walking in, and they're going at it. And sure enough, we look down, and here's Big Tom Haller. Big Tom Haller's got a bear hug on Jim Barr. You're not going to hit anybody. So at the end of the game, they had a long meeting. Jim Barr comes out. We ended up winning the game. Well, of course, you got a little clown action between me and Atlee. We wait. We come into the locker room early next day. We take Jim Barr's locker, and we put it as close as we can to Frank Manager's office, Frank Robbins' office. And Jim Barr comes in, and he was like, oh, this is real funny, real funny. But those are the things you do. But Jim Barr, what a competitor. Just, you know, he would be on my staff any day because he had the heart of a lion when he went on the mound. And he did some good things on that pitcher's mound in his career.
Well, guys like that, you run into guys like that who just didn't want to give up the ball?
Oh, absolutely. And Bill's right. You know, I think, you know, as a manager, you have to make the decision. And very seldom are you going to get talked out of it unless it's, like you said, you know, maybe it's a veteran guy or a guy you want to give some confidence to. And you know what, you give him a chance. But my experience has been, you know, you're best off making the decision once you leave that dugout and you made your decision mentally. You know, you did it for a reason. You already have all the information. So, you know, that's the way I've done it most of the time in the minor leagues when I was managing.
Yeah, I would think Samardzija is a guy who probably wouldn't want to give up the baseball right away. Matt Cain, another one.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you want them all to stay in, right? I mean, they're competitors, you know, and sometimes they're right. You're taking them out. Sometimes you're taking them out because of a pitch count situation. It shouldn't be like that, you know, but sometimes you feel like they're losing their stuff, but the pitcher doesn't feel like he's losing their stuff, and you got a fresh arm, and you feel better about it. So it is hard. You don't want these guys to want to come out. Some of the best pitchers in the game, they don't want to give up the ball. Most of them don't. So that's what makes them that good.
Yeah.
Well, and another thing, too, is relievers, too, because I remember Jeremy Affeldt, when Boach would come out, you could see the expression on his face, like, what are you doing, you know? And that's what you want in your pitcher. You want that pitcher to, no, I can get out of this, because that's the confidence factor you want of every pitcher on your staff. But starting pitchers back in the day when we all played, and Marty, when you first watched the game, you didn't want to come out of the game. You were there to complete the game. If you didn't complete the game, you felt that you didn't do your job. And that's what made the great Hall of Fame pitchers great, because of all complete games. Look at Juan Marichal. He's got more complete games than wins. And that just blows me away.
Yeah, Bob Feller, too. I saw that stat the other day, too. Won like 260 games and completed like 270 or something like that.
Never happen again.
Yeah. All right, changing positions. I mentioned a few. Well, Joe Nathan was one. You come across guys in the minor leagues that you made them pitchers after they couldn't hit?
Yeah, you know what? You know, it was never my decision. It was an organizational decision. And, you know, nobody really comes to mind, I think, other than Joe Nathan. And most of the time when you make that position switch, you know, if it's a position player, you know, if he's not very good with that sword and you give him a few years to try to straighten out as a hitter and he's got a bazooka or a cannon for an arm and they can't hit, well, that's when you make the change, when you say, you know what, this guy's never going to hit. But to see it go the other way, I think, is a lot more difficult sometimes. You know, a pitcher, and all of a sudden he's getting knocked around, and all of a sudden you make him a hitter. And I think that's more unique when that happens. I mean, look at Derek Rodriguez, right? He's another one. He was a position player, and then they taught him to be a pitcher. And I think it's much easier for these guys to be a position player and then translate into being a pitcher than going the other way, unless you're just like the Japanese guy, Otani, and you do them both so darn good. But you don't see those guys around, and you know what? Now they can do it in the big leagues. Who knows if people could have done that back in the day? I don't know. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I tell you, the guy that comes to mind is Rick Akil, you know, the left-hander that ended up playing center field. He's the first guy that I, you know, when we talk about that, I remember him so well. And he had a cannon of an arm, and sure enough, he was a decent outfielder, and he ended up playing a few years in the outfield. But I agree with you, Ron. It has to be a total different mindset from being a pitcher your whole career, and now all of a sudden you're an infielder or outfielder, and you're playing every day, and you're learning a whole different way. But the opposite way, great submission with Derek Rodriguez. As I've talked to him many times about how you enjoy playing outfield, now you're a pitcher. And he goes, to tell you the truth, I think pitching's easier. And that's what he told me. And I was like, wow, that kind of surprised me. But Derek's that kind of mindset. He loved playing outfield, but he loves pitching. And he absorbs all kind of information from everybody.
Mm, beautiful. All right, well, we'll wrap it up with a couple of easy ones here. On this day, a couple of days ago, Ralph Kiner's traded from the Pirates to the Cubs. And over that winter, prior to the trade in June, he goes to Branch Rickey, who's the general manager of the Pirates. He wants a bigger contract. Branch Rickey says, listen, we can come in last with you or without you. And sure enough, they traded him a couple of months later to the Cubs. So I'll throw that to you guys. One of the great I think that's one of the great comments of baseball. Did you ever come across something like that?
Well, I'll say this. I had my AAA manager, he was AA and AAA was Tommy Sant. You know, he always had a great line with the players. It always stuck with me. He'd always come up to a player and he'd say, hey, he goes, what's our record? And the player wouldn't know, right? And he'd stumble and he goes, okay. He goes, hey, by the way, he goes, what are you hitting? And the guy would, I'm hitting 285. And he'd go, oh, you know what you're hitting, but you don't know what team record is, right? And he'd start telling you, one-way Bill. Okay, yeah, you're just worried about yourself. They got street signs named after you, one way. And that's how we got on you to say, hey, you better be concerned about the team. And, you know, that always stuck with me. And that's a great line. I've heard that line before, and it's the absolute truth, you know. We can lose 100 games or we can lose with you as well as we can without you. So,
yeah, and pitching coaches, you'd always say, you know, if you want to listen to me, you'll go farther. But if you don't, I'll have somebody wearing those spikes to somebody wants your spikes tomorrow. Meaning if you better don't carry on, you're going to be gone. And you know, I keep going back to back in the day, but those are the kind of pitching coaches you had where you literally sat there with a Bill Fisher or Dick Cole or, you know, Herm Storrett, where they literally wanted to teach you like a class. And, you know, guys just bucked it. The guys wanted to do their own thing. But you always had that one stellar line, like Ron says, where somebody gets it to you and you're like, oh, okay, then I guess we'll sit down and talk because I like my spike time.
I love it. I love those. And really, you know, it's such a rich part of baseball, those little sayings that coaches say to players. It's great. I love it. All right, 2006. Lastings Millage, he's with the Mets, hits a home run against Armando Benitez. That's another story. Ninth inning at in San Francisco. It's the first home run he's ever hit, and he ties the game up. In between innings, he goes out to right field, and on his way, he high-fives the fans in the stands. Whoa, you remember this?
Yeah, I remember it. How could I forget that? I mean, you know, the whole dugout, every one of us just looked at each other in misbelief, like, did I just see that? I mean, I remember that point. I mean, this guy was a rookie, as I remember it. That was his first home run, and I think we were just all flabbergasted that he had the nerve to do that, you know, with respect for the game and for the opponent, and we just never seen anything like it. So it was a shocking moment, no doubt about it, and I don't know if we've ever seen it since then, have we?
I can't remember.
I can't imagine it. I couldn't imagine it happening. You know, those are a type of things you put your hand in your pocket and you just kind of do the head nod to the crowd. I don't think you really want to show up your opponent like he did. And like you said, your whole dugout was watching in every eye, coming out of the eyeball at him going, I can't believe he's doing this. Why, are you serious? But he did and really made a fool out of himself.
Nice kid. I had him on the show. I remember having him on. He finally made it with the Mets. He was a high draft pick, I think, and he had trouble, you know, doing anything. But that was his day. On one of these shows, we'll tackle Armando Benitez. We'll do that.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That'll be a good one. All right. Well, hey, you guys, Saturday night, I appreciate your being part of it. It's been a crazy week, and we'll see what happens with baseball. And well, I'll say this to you and Bill. You know, you've been part of clubhouses. You know what it is to be teammates and respect of other people. And I think the one thing we learned this week is everyone deserves respect and honesty and justice, and that's what we have to keep in mind. And in baseball, we see it probably more than anywhere else, right? And in the clubhouses, you have to get along.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was well said. And, I mean, it's so diverse in a major league clubhouse. You know, we all look at each other as brothers in there when you're on a team and you're working with people from all over the world. And, you know, it's just so sad to see that it's not like that everywhere. And when you're around a major league clubhouse, you understand that. And it's first and foremost a respect for your teammates and the team and the job we all have to do. So hopefully we can come together and get some things moving in the right direction. There needs to be some change, obviously. And, you know, just small steps. It's not going to happen overnight, but if we're all aware of it, hopefully we can get things moving in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I agree with both of you. And I think diversity we've had in clubhouses for so many years, and players have united and become better people from it. And that's what we have to do to see the change of this world is knock the prejudice off the wall and change it and be strong within each other and be strong with each other. And with that being said, you know, I'm just hoping that both sides of baseball realize what they're going to do if they don't have a baseball season or a subpar baseball season. It's going to tear the heart out of a lot of baseball fans. And that's something we need to unite with baseball instead of separate. And I'm hoping that that happens this week, where we get a clearer picture for the baseball season and we can get Ron back to work as well as all these baseball players that want to play. And let's start getting positives. Too many negatives in the last 3 or 4 months, and the world needs positives as well as all baseball fans, and so do we. And again, gentlemen, it was a great time again with you guys tonight, and I can only appreciate both your wisdoms in baseball, and I just have a fun time every Saturday talking to both of you.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you,
well,
Bill.
Well, thanks for another great night. And as I said, you must have the best garden out there. Where are you? In Lafayette, wherever you are. You've been working on it every day.
I'm in the East Bay. I got a lot of water issues out here. You got to keep the plant alive, just not the garden. So I never knew it was this difficult.
Pick those tomatoes.
All right. All right, guys. Have a good night. We'll talk
Enjoyed
to you next
it.
Week.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. That's Ron Wotus and Bill Lasky.